Fine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back after the storm, which I think affected all of Alabama in one way or another. A lot of rain, a bit of wind, though maybe less damage in Mobile than some storms. Welcome back to a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Welcome back to an Alabama Sunday morning. And we're going to talk about Alabama. We're going to talk about the Gulf Coast. We're going to talk about your garden. We're going to talk about the seasons. And I'm going to start off by just reminding you that we are in a seasonal transition. Don't go looking at some calendar in New York. Don't expect to see it in the New York Times. This is about where you are. This is about where you live. This is about what you do. This is about our seasons here along the Gulf Coast, and they are transitioning. We've got six of them, generally. They don't always unravel in quite the same way every year. Springs and winters and summers and falls don't unravel the same anywhere every year. They all change. They're all a little different, but we see some consistency in how they work. And when we look at the six seasons of the Gulf Coast, it's really quite interesting. I mean, we don't have names for them because we're from, you know, we still have our minds stuck in Europe. It's funny, isn't it? It's like we never left Europe. So we have the same seasons Europe has. We grow the same plants Europe grows, even though we live in an entirely different place, entirely different climate. So, of course, we only have four seasons. Well, that's ridiculous. We have six of them here. They're very real, very distinctive. And we're about to emerge, but June 20th is usually my date from emerging from that American summer. A typical summer that most people would experience across most of America, with temperatures in the 80s and sometimes into the 90s. Often very quite hot, starting about mid-April and lasting through the middle of June. But drier than other times of year along the Gulf Coast, and certainly drier than the period we're about to emerge into. Where soon enough it will start raining virtually every day. Not because of tropical storms coming in from the Gulf, but simply because of differences in temperatures between the water, between the Gulf water, and the land itself. And that will last for a while. You know, just every day you can count on that rain. You can also count on the humidity. And that's going to make a lot of things differently. Your tomatoes grew really well. A lot of people had a really good production with their tomatoes. And this year, you might get a little more production, just a little more. Because we've had an unusually cool period. And we're going to continue to have, perhaps for a while, unusually cool temperatures that will allow those tomatoes to keep producing. But once those night temperatures, as they did this, you know, last night and the night before, stay above 75, 76, 77, 78 degrees, they never drop down below 78, sometimes not even below 80. When the night temperatures are that high, the tomatoes are going to quit producing. It just always happens. A lot of bugs are going to catch up with you. Tomatoes are going to have a hard time breathing because the night temperatures are so high. And that means that the effort they put in, that the energy they draw from photosynthesis during the day is basically breathed away at night, wasted at night by excess respiration because they're having a hard time. They're struggling. And that's what happens this time of year. But you know, it's a great time of year for other things. It's when other things come into their own. The okra comes into its own. The eggplants do really great. The peppers, if you got the right kind of peppers, are going to do really well. The southern peas are going to do really well. There are a lot of things that really love this hot weather. All kinds of hibiscus, including the edible hibiscus. You know, this year I'm growing a bunch of different kinds of okra. There's so many kinds of okra in the world. I've got a pink lavender okra that comes from the Okinawan Islands. I've got an okra that comes from maybe even a different species of okra, a kind of a new hybrid of okra that comes from West Africa rather than the traditional okra that we usually use. All kind of interesting okras that you can be doing this time of year. Lots of fun things that you can be doing in your garden. Lots of great plants. It's just a different season, a different time. It's a time for tropical plants. It's a time when the subtropical atmosphere of the Gulf Coast and indeed of most of Alabama really comes to the fore, and you need to take advantage of it. Need to take advantage of it. Seasons are changing, and so we're going to look forward to it. Let's also talk a little bit about weeding. I'm thinking a lot about weeding, and we've talked a lot about it. It's one of the questions I get as much as anything on the show is weeding, and I think I ought to come up with a list of all of the great ways that you can use to invite weeds into your garden, because we do. I say this over and over and over. We make weeds. Weeds don't exist until we make them weeds. We make weeds, and they become weeds. There's no question. They're an annoyance to us. They're difficult. You probably don't want them. You probably don't need them. They're probably going to interfere with things you want to do. But the thing you need to understand is we made them. You're likely making them a weed. And one way to understand that is to understand all the ways that we invite weeds into our yards. And we do it all the time. You know, I've had neighbors who panic if they see something growing in your yard that they don't recognize, because they say, "Oh man, I'm meticulously keeping my lawn. Don't you let that weed come into my yard." Whatever it is, whether it's a weed or not. They'll worry about weeds along the roadways. But you know what? Most weeds, there's some exceptions, most weeds are not going to come into your yard unless you invite them. You've got to ask them in. And you're going to ask them in by the way you manage your yard. And that's really important. And it's one of the fundamental things we should be thinking about. You know, one of the basic ways that we invite weeds into our yard is by our mowing. Most people who have problems with weeds in their lawn, they blame it on their neighbors. But the truth is, it's really about the way they manage their lawns, not their neighbors. It's not your neighbor's yard that's the problem. It's your yard, always. If you're mowing very short, you're going to invite weeds in. It's inevitable. Now, those weeds may come from your neighbors, but more than likely, they're just going to be seeds that are already in your yard, that have long been in your yard, that have been suppressed because grass or something was shading them out. But once you start mowing your yard really close, you're going to end up with stickers. You can't have stickers. Stickers are always there. There's always some seeds from stickers hanging around, but they often don't germinate until people start mowing their lawns really, really close, scalping the lawn. Guarantee, you're going to get stickers. You're going to get lots of other weeds besides the stickers. That's the way it is. We invite weeds into our yard. We invite weeds into the yard anytime we leave the ground exposed to sunlight. If the dirt can see sunlight, that's like saying, you know, it's like having those big, nice little, pretty little welcome signs. Welcome to our house. You'll love it here. That's what that bare ground says to weeds. And the weeds may be in the soil. They could be airborne. Not usually, but they could come from birds. But they're going to be there. They're going to be in your yard. Don't invite those weeds. We'll talk a little bit more about how we invite weeds into our yards when we come back. We're going to talk about your questions. I got lots of them. See them stacking up. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Have a little song, won't take long. Sing it right once or twice. Oh, Lord, and me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Plain Gardening. How are we going to, a few more ways that we invite weeds into our yard. It's kind of an important subject. It's an important thing to think about. You know, we often, a lot of weeds, and I try to warn people about this, are weeds that we plant accidentally. And this has happened. Listen, I'm as guilty as anybody. And sometimes we plant them deliberately, those weeds. And I have been guilty of that too. You learn. Sometimes when we talk about invasive plants, we need to talk carefully about... Sometimes people see pretty things, and the pretty thing is all they can see. And they bring it into their yard, and boy, it just eats them up. Bermuda grass is one of those things. People plant Bermuda grass. Oh, man, gosh. What a miserable thing we've brought into our lives. Now, I know some people are very happy with Bermuda grass. Not many people in Mobile are happy with Bermuda grass because it never grows where you want it to. It always grows where you don't want it to. And there's a reason for that if you understand Bermuda grass. But it's a real nuisance. But people plant it. And I don't recommend it if you want anything else in your yard. I don't recommend it. You need to be careful about the kinds of things you plant. There are lots of flowers that way. There's the, in fact, we had a picture of it last week. One of the, you know, I call it, cashmere bouquet, goat weed. It's a tropical plant that, that people share around because it has a pretty flower, pinkish flower with big broad leaves. But boy, the reason people share it is because it runs. So when somebody gives you something, be aware that they may be giving you that thing because they have way too much of it and because it's way too easy to grow. And it will take over your yard and it will be a nuisance. You may be able to grow nothing else. Be careful. It's a problem sometimes. Inviting weeds into our yard, something to think about, thinking about more. Got a lot of questions this morning. Tomatoes. So a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm giving up on tomatoes. I wouldn't just yet. I think we've probably got another week or two of good tomato production. If we can get past this rainfall that we had this week, I think the temperatures are going to be cool. We're going to have tomato production a little bit longer than usual this year, is my guess. Because the temperatures are going to be good. The temperatures are going to be right. So we can continue to pick tomatoes. Don't give up on them just yet. But the bugs are going to be a problem. There's no question. The stink bugs are going to be an issue. This is why it's really nice to have smaller tomatoes this time of year, particularly as the stink bugs progress. Hope you planted a few of the smaller tomatoes because they'll be very productive. You'll have tons of them. They'll be quite delicious. And there's no way the stink bugs will get to all of them. That's the way around that. Really easy. So, you know, smaller tomatoes actually are more tolerant of the temperatures that we get with Gulf summer, the season we have coming up, this distinctive season of rain every day and very high night temperatures. So the smaller tomatoes, definitely hold on to them. They're probably going to keep producing. The larger tomatoes, the ones that don't produce a lot, the heirloom tomatoes that they talk about in Indiana and all those places, they're going to have a hard time right now because they're not well adapted to these kinds of temperatures. But the other tomatoes are going to do really well. Some people are asking me, if you have a tomato and it's done, can you put it in the compost? Well, you could. You could. And then I would say, well, but you might want to think about this and this and this. But let me tell you what I would do with tomatoes. Cut the vines and leave them where they are. Right there, in the beds. No need to move them. Everything that a tomato could do wrong in terms of producing disease is already there in the bed. Just leave them where they are. Use them as mulch on the beds. Right there. Isn't that simple? Boom. Be great. They'll deteriorate right there in the beds. Leave them where they are. Before you plant tomatoes there again, however, make sure you add a deep mulch to that bed. And don't turn it in. Don't turn the plants in. You don't need to do any of that. Just add a deep mulch. And you could wait a couple of years. Next year, you might want to plant beans there. Perfect. Tomato diseases aren't going to affect beans. You could plant peas there. Tomato diseases aren't going to affect peas. You could plant okra there. Tomato diseases aren't going to affect okra. So next year, you'll plant right into that. Maybe you could use a little mulch there in the meantime. And in fact, right now, if you wanted to cut your tomatoes down, plant a crop of peas right on top of it. Boom. There you go. They'll cover those tomato vines in no time. You won't even see them. You'll have a great crop growing right there. That's the way to do it. I don't create a separate mulch pile. There are a lot of problems with doing that. I don't create a mulch pile and move things to the mulch pile and then move, or a compost pile, and then move it from the compost back to the garden. That's just the wrong idea. Compost in the garden, that's the right idea. That's how you get the benefit of compost. Compost where you're going to grow things. And just compost those tomato vines directly where they grow. Simple enough. Any questions? You just give me a call. So another question about determinate tomatoes. Do they grow well on the Gulf Coast? Well, yeah and no. Some determinate tomatoes do and some don't. Let's talk a little bit about determinate and indeterminate tomatoes. Determinate tomatoes are tomatoes that tend to produce all their fruits all at once, and they were designed for commercial harvest. You know, does it make sense on the Gulf Coast to grow determinate tomatoes? It does, particularly if you're canning, if you're saving your tomatoes, if you need a lot of tomatoes at once, because that's what's going to happen. And it can be that you can just say, look, I'm not even going to chance the idea that I'm going to be able to produce tomatoes later in the season. I want to get them as early as I can. So if you find a determinate tomato that produces in 65 or 70 days, yeah, go ahead. Give it a shot. By the time the tomatoes are exhausted, if you plant it in March from that determinate tomato, then your tomato season might be over anyway. But I would always grow an indeterminate tomato with it. An indeterminate tomato is a tomato that keeps producing, that produces for a long time, not just one big glump of fruit, but a steady production for a long period of time. And particularly the indeterminates would be smaller tomatoes. Smaller tomatoes. Yeah, it's worth experimenting with determinate tomatoes. They're not the answer. They're not... they're one of many answers, depending on what you want, depending on what you need. So determinate tomatoes can work pretty well. Oftentimes, I think determinate tomatoes don't have, sometimes don't seem to have as good a flavor. Sometimes don't seem to have as nice a flavor as some of the others. I'm not sure I can explain why. But there it is. What are some of the other what are some of the other things we got going on? Sean is talking about he's got his red and Cajun Jewel okra coming up. That's an awful nice thing. It's the time for okra. If you haven't planted some, go ahead and plant it. It'll like this moist soil. It'll make it really easy. It'll love the hot weather. Man, I got okra coming up. It's so good to see. I love to see okra. Some people may already have okra that they're ready to harvest. But you know, the great thing about okra is it really tolerates these high night temperatures, tolerates really well. It'll keep producing into September or October. If it slows down at some point, and if you plant it now and it slows down sometime in late August, you remind me to tell you what to do. There's a thing to do. And it'll keep producing. If you haven't planted your basil, you might try your basil. I will remind you that there is a disease of basil that can be a little bit of a problem in our climate. So I'm using varieties like Obsession, the basil variety Obsession. You can remember that name. Does really well along the Gulf Coast, does really well throughout Alabama, and doesn't have the disease problems. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Down by the Green River, where paradise lay. Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's gold train is hauled it away.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning, and on the verge of a new season throughout Alabama. It's going to be a little different from now on. It's going to transition slowly. That's going to be one of the interesting things this year. For some reason, we've got this exceptional cool spell that we'll have over the next couple of weeks. It looks like through the end of June at least. I suspect July is going to be... We may pay for it in July. But you know, I love July. I love July on the Gulf Coast. I love July in Alabama. It's this wonderful time. It does your body good. The warmth does your body good. Particularly in the mornings. You can get out in the mornings. You can get out in the evenings. Sometimes you might even get out at midday if you're up for it. Build your strength up for it. Your body will get used to it. Your body will tolerate it. It's funny how your body adapts. We live in air conditioning all the time, so we don't even know we live in the South, but your body will adapt. It really adapts quite well. It'll be a little bit of a comeuppance, little bit of a, that's not the right word. You know, it's going to catch your attention. Being out in the hot weather, because we're not used to it anymore. We're not Southerners anymore. We live in temperatures that resemble Michigan. We're Michiganders. Just happen to be living in Mobile. But get out in the warmth. It's good for you. It's good for you this time of year. Jesse sent me a picture of something in his flower beds. You know, it's a type of portulaca. And Jesse, I'm having a hard time telling. It may be a, can't tell exactly what kind. I'm working on it. It's not the typical wild portulaca we see. I think it may be a seedling for some portulaca that you had there before. But purslane, portulaca, that's what that plant is. That's what it is. yeah, look at this. Pretty beautiful pictures. Dan's got some great pictures of these baby frogs. Isn't that cool? Do we know what kind they are? What are they? What are they? I can't tell. Maybe some cricket frogs, maybe some other things. They're a little bit young, I guess, for me to make a good guess at what they are. Have we got a caller? Leanna, I think we do. Who's calling? Yeah. Who's All right, here we go. David, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning to you. Happy Father's Day to you and all the other dads and granddads and everybody else that's listening.
Yeah.
I got a question for you about insects. It seems to be that, you know, the water and temperature and insects play such a part of what we try to grow here. Also, fleas. And I want to ask you about this stuff, diatomaceous earth. I'm not that familiar with it. How does it affect our garden? Does it? Is it an organic matter? It says that it's silica. I really don't know much about it, but everybody wants to be kind of organic now. Is this a means of insect control for our garden? Does it have a negative
effect? I can tell you it will not affect your garden in any way, nor will it affect the fleas, nor will it affect any insects. And here's the reason why. I doubt that diatomaceous earth would work on fleas, practically speaking, anywhere, except maybe inside your house. But diatomaceous earth, once it gets wet, is useless, whatever benefits it has. And that's why I never would recommend diatomaceous earth in the garden in Mobile, because, well, it won't hurt anything, but it won't help anything either, because it'll be wet inevitably. So that's the simple answer. Don't worry about diatomaceous earth. Don't use it. Don't waste your money on it. Won't work. Particularly here. Could it work inside the house? Possibly. Possibly. Is it a problem inside the house? Well, it's going to be a bit dusty, but, you know, it could work. I think it might work in carpets, for example, where things are hard to get there. I wouldn't rule that out. And I think if you were to apply it occasionally in the house, I can't think it would be any problem. Excess breathing, but it's a pretty heavy material. It's going to be hard to breathe a lot of it. But it's a natural product. It's just a sharp, sharp microscopic particle that can cut the skin of something like a flea. But only if it's very dry, only if it's bone dry, really, does diatomaceous earth work. So there it is. That's the end of that. But that's not the end of this conversation, because you got flea problems, right?
I do. And I went to one of the fly houses here, and the first thing they said was, you know, oh, diatomaceous earth, and they had these pallets full of them. So I bought a bag, I think it was like 40 pounds, and put it out. And I don't know, it almost felt like they were getting fat on it. It didn't work, like just exactly what you just said. It did not seem to have any negative effect at all. And so I'm still stuck with this flea problem at my office. You know, it's off the ground. The house is built on piers, the office is built on piers. And I do have partial carpet in there, but oh my. I mean, it just all of a sudden just happened. There are cats in the area. My office is in the Theodore area, and there are cats, and I'm sure there's probably raccoons and stuff like that. But now, help, help, help.
All right. So let's get the diatomaceous earth off the table. You know, it is interesting that people who recommend things because they read about them in magazines in Arizona or California or Michigan, and they forget that we live in a very different place. So that's unfortunate, and we waste a lot of money and a lot of time gardening here because we don't recognize where we are and how different it is. And it's very wet here, by the way. Has anybody noticed? And diatomaceous earth doesn't work, but you got fleas. And, you know, are the fleas a problem? Are the fleas a problem in your house?
Well, yeah, it is. And I mean, and I'm vacuuming, you know, twice a day, and I put a couple of these bombs off, you know, that you get at
Have you got cats?
Not at my house. I do not.
Do you have a dog?
I do not. Not at my house. Now, I know there are cats at my shop, and it seems to be about the same. And I don't know if they're coming from the outside, inside. I just don't know. I don't know how they really live. I don't really know that much about the fleas, other than the fact that I've got on white socks, which is what I wear mostly. They jump on it. And
yeah, and they're jumping on it outside. So here's the, and then moving in, there's probably not a lot for them to live on inside except for you. I think having a bomb inside can work. Make sure you don't re-enter that house for a while after setting off the bomb, but you do have to deal with what's outside. And there really won't be a practical way of dealing with what's going on outside other than dealing with those cats. Do you know whose cats they are?
Well, at my shop, I do. They're wild cats because they have the clipped ears. You know, it shows that they were feral cats that were fixed. And I'm guilty of feeding them because I don't want any kind of rodents around it. So I do feed them. I don't really have cats at my house at all, but I, you know, do have a yard, you know, completely around it. And you must be right about jumping on the fleas jumping on me outside. Or the floor is inside, but I think they do jump on the outside. But yeah, at my shop in the Theodore area, I kind of keep these cats around just for rodent control. Make sure I don't have any.
Well, I'll just tell you that I think it's going to be very hard to control the fleas with the cats. They do. Cat fleas are not always the most threatening for people, but when they build up in large numbers, they can be really bad. And they can be a real annoyance. I think it's the cats. Now, you can do a couple of things. One, you can use, I think Bravecta doesn't work for cats. But you can use, the best thing to do would be to come up with some type of flea deterrent for the cats themselves. Make sure it's designed for cats if you want to keep the cats. Without the cats serving I'm sure it's the cats, and it's probably not raccoons. Now, I'll also tell you, but I'll have a caveat. If you're feeding cats, you're feeding the raccoons too. It's the cats, and I don't think you're going to solve the problem until you get rid of You got to reduce the number of cats.
Are you talking about maybe something to feed the cat?
There are some treatments for cats that will reduce the number of fleas that cats get.
I don't handle these cats. I don't touch them. They come close to me, yeah, and they expect a little food, but they were at one time, they were, you know, feral cats. But I don't handle them and pick them up. I wouldn't definitely put anything on them, but if there's something maybe I could maybe possibly go to the vet or something now.
Yeah, I would talk to the vet about it and see what he has, and it won't be cheap. I don't recommend feeding cats outside. I don't think it really helps with rodents. They kill lots of lizards. They kill lots of birds. They don't kill for food, and particularly if you're feeding them, they're not killing for food. And rodents are hard for cats to deal with, so they probably don't kill a lot of the rodents. And you end up attracting probably as many rodents to the cat food as you do as the cats themselves kill.
Yeah.
So I don't think the cats are actually helping you, but you may have. I think you got a cat problem as much as a flea problem.
Okay, I understand. So I'll just take this diatomaceous earth off the plate, because this is my second bag, 40-pound bag.
No, it won't help at all.
Okay.
And it's just moisture. I think it may help in some places, but it certainly won't help on the Gulf Coast.
I got you. Understood. I do appreciate your time and your information. I'll enjoy listening to the rest of the show, okay?
All right. Thank you. Sorry about the fleas.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, through the window.
with me.
You just feel like you can't ever let it happen without acknowledging. After all these years. But we don't apologize. We just do it. We just do it. Tiny Tim. Hey, Matt, I want to say Matt took a great picture. Leanna and I have been discussing what this thing looks like. Leanna says it looks like a pineapple. And there's a reason she thinks it looks like a pineapple. It's not actually closely related, but there are some similarities. Except, imagine a pineapple that's pink, that's basically pink, with some funny-looking little yellow flowers on each of the shelves of the of these pink shelves on the pineapple. It's hard to describe. It's a ginger. It's one of the so-called hidden gingers, except this one isn't that hidden, is it? It pokes way above. Some of these hidden gingers have the flowers that are right next to the ground, but it's a type of ginger. You can smell it if you can't smell a picture. But if you could smell a picture, if you could smell a picture, you could see that it was a ginger. Yeah, just real clearly. Really pretty flowers, complex compound flowers, and in each tier there's a little yellow flower sticking out. Really pretty thing. Matt took this picture, Matt McLean, and he won the Plain Gardening of the Gulf Coast photo contest for this past week. And for that, Matt gets this nice little poster that reminds you of these seasonal transitions here along the Gulf Coast and helps you to sort of focus on what to do when in the vegetable gardening. Great little thing, the Wonder Wheel. The Wonder Wheel still works after all these years. A few things I did right, not many, but that one works. It's useful. It could be improved, but it works. There it is. Matt, congratulations. You too can win the Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast photo contest by posting your pictures on Facebook and having people vote on them. It's always nice to have things posted on Facebook just to demonstrate, and I encourage people to do that so people can see things going on there that we talk about on the show. I think the pictures that are pretty or strange are the ones that win, I think. I'll just tell you. And the instructional photos don't win, generally, but it's really nice to have those posted, too. If you have a photo and you want to know right away, if you want me to respond right away to what the problem is, if you've got a question attached to that photo, send it to me not on Facebook, but to 251-343-0106. Just text it, just like you text a question. You can text that photo. Rodney did that. Rodney texted me a photo. He was bragging about his boy Rodney. He's bragging about his produce. But Rodney has got shelves full of stuff. I mean, and including a really cool looking mixer. What a cool looking mixer you got there, Rodney. Lots of tomatoes. Just bragging on himself. But then, and it's good. Because he did a great job. He might have had some help. But then he sent me a picture of something he called an aphid. And it's not an aphid, Rodney. And it's important to know what it is. It's actually, but he did call it a herd. And that's an important thing. They're bark lice. They're bark lice. Now, bark lice don't do anything to people or to plants. They basically eat detritus. They've been around for 300 million years. Yeah, I mean, they've been around for a long time. You think I'm exaggerating? Well, maybe just a little. Maybe exaggerating by about 5 million years. But they've been around about 295 million years or so. One of the oldest little things around that's still extant, still living. Bark lice, really cool stuff. And they just eat detritus. That's how they made a living for a long, long time. And detritus, by that I mean just junk, organic matter, stuff in trees. So oftentimes you'll see them on trees. Kind of unusual to see them where they are, but they're probably finding detritus even there. And they'll often clean out the bark in trees just of detritus that accumulates there. It doesn't have any impact on the trees at all. They don't harm plants. They don't harm people, but they are just as cool as they can be. And it's the herding aspect of bark lice that is so cool. Because if you can kind of push it, it's just like pretend your finger is a little shepherd dog, you know, a border collie. If you like Australian shepherds, it can be an Australian shepherd. Whatever you want your little finger to be, and take your little finger and just wiggle it right in front of them, and you'll see they just herd. You herd them just like sheepdogs do. It's fun. They herd just like sheep. They're the coolest things in the world. Bark lice. B-A-R-K-L-I-C-E. Really cool looking things that occur in the gardens. Completely harmless. Just fun. Just fun to play with. I don't play with them too much. Don't play with them too much. So I got another picture here from Hollis in Saraland. He's asking me what kind of grass is this. And Hollis, it looks for all the world to me, mostly, I mean, there's some other things in there, but I'm seeing a lot of St. Augustine. There may be some other things coming up in it, too. I'm having a harder time telling. Maybe some fescue or something in there. But I don't see anything particularly harmful. I will say what is harmful is the fact that this grass has been mowed very, very, very close. And if it is St. Augustine, it ain't going to survive like that, and you're going to get starting to get other weeds. So let's say you mostly have St. Augustine, and that's good. You need to, Hollis, mow it at about 4 inches high. I ain't kidding. It's the way to do it. And I'm not the only one saying that. We've been saying that for a long time. People are now getting bolder. They're catching on. The extension agents are finally realizing, you know, gosh, that's right. Why the heck are we doing? Why are we mowing this grass to 2 inches high? It makes everything hard. It means we got weeds. Raise your mower as high to the highest setting you can possibly get it on. And if you want good looking grass, you'll get it. It'll be as good a grass as you can possibly grow. No grass is perfect, but it looks like it's mostly St. Augustine. Keep your settings high. Keep those settings high. Now, there is something growing right around the tree. I can't tell what it is, but whatever that little tree is that you've got in the middle of the grass with a tag on it, it looks like it's had a hard time. Looks like it may be dead. You could ask me about that, too, but I'll need a little more information on that. But part of the problem is it's having to compete with grass. So keep that grass away from that tree. You've probably even banged that little tree with a mower several times or with a weed whacker. There you go. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian chunk.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, who's the father of your garden? Interesting question. My garden has many mothers, and my garden has many fathers. My father is the father of my garden, partially. I am the father of his garden. We both helped out. We both helped each other out for many years. I've been thinking about that a lot this week, the time we spent in the garden. him ignoring my advice, my ignoring his advice, we probably would have been better off had we both heeded each other's advice sometimes. Who's the father of your garden? Interesting question. My grandfather's the father of my garden. He played a really interesting role and didn't spend it, didn't have to, you know, watching him on Schillinger's Road, you know, when my dad said, son, I don't have a vegetable garden. That's the reason I left home. His father kept that garden going for years and years and years out on Schillinger's Road. I remember it really well, off Schillinger's Road, back in the days when it wasn't so hard to imagine having a garden out there surrounded by longleaf. Really cool spot. But I remember him taking me up to the old home place in Hiwani. Anybody know where Hiwani is? Named for the Yowani. The Yowani. A tribe we forgot. Tribe we wanted to forget. Because of what we did. But Hiwani was one of those old towns along the Chickasaw River, and Granddad took me up to the old home place on that old prairie soil. And he opened his hands out, and he had those little seeds in those hands, those turnip seeds, and he had his rake in the other hand, and he said, "Son, with these, you'll never go hungry." And it's true. Well, had a few things other than turnip seeds, but turnip seeds will work. They'll work for you. Many, many fathers in my garden. John Giordano, a father of my garden. John's gone. Remember his garden well. Remember our gardening escapades well. Many fathers for my garden. I'm thinking about them today. Lots of questions here. David is absolutely right. David, Louis Prima, singing about Gugutsa makes up for the fact that we have to, as an obligation, play Tiny Tim on the show. That's one way we balance it all out. Tony has got some great questions about recipes for his ahi dulces. I'm going to come back and talk about that, Tony. You know I'm a sucker for that. Don't let me forget, Tony. You just keep hassling me until I give you some recipes. There's some great things to do with them. Somebody asked about St. Augustine seeds. When they go to seed, St. Augustine grass, when it goes to seed, will the seeds germinate or are they sterile? No, in most cases, St. Augustine grass seed is not sterile. There are some varieties that are sterile. But it is possible that you can get seeds of St. Augustine grass to germinate. But they're very hard to separate. They're very hard to spread. You kind of let it happen where it is. But I always think it's a benefit if you actually get some seeds germinating in your established St. Augustine bed, because that's the future. You know, somebody asked me the other day, why is diversity useful? And I said, because it's our future. It's our future. Diversity is our future. And having a diverse St. Augustine population made up of not just a clone, much of your St. Augustine yards are clones, every stem is identical, but actually getting a little diversity back in there, at least a little diversity of St. Augustine, may help your St. Augustine survive, because those sexually reproducing seeds have a greater possibility that one of them will be able to survive some of the disease and pest problems that St. Augustine has. It's our future, those young seeds. They're good things. And not all varieties will produce. There are some varieties that produce sterile seeds. Probably you don't have those varieties in your yard. Probably your St. Augustine is going to germinate. The seed's going to germinate. Alan, you know, I didn't know we were going to end up talking about fleas today, but you know, it's about time. It seems like the right time to do it. Tell me what you got.
Well, I usually listen for gardening, too, because I have a brown thumb. But I am in the pest control industry. So listening online or listening to you earlier, the guy called in with a problem with fleas, and that's very common right now, especially right now. The best thing, the best advice I can give, other than calling pest control company yourself if you're trying to do it at home, you can buy a granule. And the granule is called Bifen, B-I-F-E-N. You can spread that around your yard or shop where he has it. And you can also top it with a liquid called Talstar. Talstar you mix with water. It has all the instructions on the booklet. And, of course, granules need to be activated by liquid, usually the rain. But if you top it with a Talstar, you will have no problems with fleas. He doesn't have pets in his house. So taking care of the exterior of the house and the shop should take care of the problem inside the house. He may want to do another bomb after he treats the yard just to kill the ones that are in the house, continue in vacuuming two times a day until they're gone. But that's the best thing that I can recommend using for fleas.
Yeah, I'd say that. I Talstar has a lot of negative impacts on other creatures in the yard, but Here's what I would say. With cats moving in and out of his yard all the time, he would have to effectively treat every yard around him. And so the cats are going to continually bring fleas back in, and they'll get on him before the Talstar can actually affect the reproduction of the fleas or the Bifen.
That is correct. Especially as wet as we are. It won't, you know, you go somewhere that's dry, the Bifen or the Talstar may last 4 months, 5 months, but as wet as we are, it's not going to last that long. So if he doesn't take care of the problem, what's bringing in the flea, then he'll never be able to get it under control. You're absolutely right.
That's right. So it's, you know, I don't know what to say about cats. Cats have, boy, I'm going to get in big trouble. Alan, I'm fixing to get in big trouble here. I'm going to blame it on you. You know, folks, we should not be feeding cats outside. I just will tell you, it creates tons of problems. And it's not just fleas. But, you know, if you want a problem that's going to drive you crazy, fleas.
That's exactly right. Feeding, you were right when you said the cat food causes more problems than it helps with those cats. Because when we go out to a house with rat problems or a yard or anything else, the first thing we look for is a food source. Because they're not going to come around if there's not a food source. And
that's right.
That cat food, dog food, and bird seed, especially. If you have bird seed close to your house, that's where the rats are going to. So eliminate the food source with the rats. Eliminate somehow eliminate the cats. I'm not going to get into that too deep. Get either one of us in trouble. But
we get a buzz in trouble.
Yeah, and Bifen is a better product than Talstar if you're worried about the ecosystem around your yard.
That's right.
Without a doubt, Bifen would probably be a better route to go than the Talstar. It is pretty harsh. It's great for insects. You don't want them around your house and yard, but Bifen's a little bit easier.
Yeah. Talstar's pretty, it's a nursery industry product that they're forced to use. It's pretty bad. Bifen is affects egg reproduction. Is that, what's its active?
That is absolutely right. So you're going to, you know, and the biggest problem people don't realize with fleas is, and some pest control people, I've heard them tell everything, all kinds of non-truths. When we go in and we treat a house for fleas, nothing's going to kill that egg in that house. So people might tell you, oh, we can treat your house once and kill fleas. Well, after they leave, those eggs are still going to hatch. And
eggs
then you're
going to
have the problem
right.
all over again.
That's
so
right.
don't
that's
let
right.
anybody tell you that, oh, one treatment will kill all the fleas. You have to either do several treatments or remove those eggs, and that's why it's so important, again, to vacuum consistently.
Vacuum, that's right. That's right.
Yep. So just trying
Alan,
to
thank you.
With the flea problem.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you.
And now we got to figure out what to do about the cat problem, Alan.
Yeah, hey, I'll leave that up to him. I'm not going to get in trouble.
Right. So, hey, we'll be back.
And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-rutting that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was about out.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. You know, we're going to be all fleas all the time. I don't mean for us to be, but we're going to talk a little bit more about them. And this morning, kind of surprising that's where we got. But, you know, it makes sense. It's flea time. It's a flea problem. And everybody's got something. But let me tell you. Let me tell you, it's the cats, it's the raccoons, it's the rats that are the flea problem, not the fleas. The fleas won't be a problem with those. The fleas will always be a problem if you have those. And the source of those three things, it's always the same, putting food outside. Putting food outside for your dog, for your cats. And leaving it there is going to be a huge problem. If you have cats, keep them inside. Boom. There it is. Are cats good mousers? No. They're terrible at it. They're just terrible at it. You know, I think we bred all that out of them. I think a generation ago, cats were probably great mousers. Maybe. But that's because we didn't feed them. They had to eat something. They ate everything. And they're more likely to eat birds. They're more likely to eat lizards. They're more likely to eat lots of other things in your yard before they'll eat. You know, I can't tell you how many dead chameleons, the little green anoles, little green chameleons that I've seen dead in my yard from cats playing with them. I had the cats. I know. I understand. And I can say I didn't start out with understanding how bad cats were, but I understand now. But feeding them outside is a real problem, and that's going to create all kind of other issues. And I'm just telling you, it's the way it works. We can talk about all kind of cures for fleas, but that's the cure, and that's the one. And it will cure a lot of other problems, too. Probably even reduce. Quit feeding the cats outside, you'll have fewer rats, fewer mice. I guarantee. Pete, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, I'm retired veterinarian, and veterinarians and pest control people have different ideas on this. If you understand the life cycle of a flea, then you can figure out how to get rid of them. And fleas are not in the environment. Pupa are in the environment. When a flea lays an egg, the egg rolls off the animal. It has to be on an animal. And hatches, turns into a larva, and it spends a couple of weeks, and then spins a cocoon, and that's the pupa stage.
Right.
And it's like the caterpillar turning into a butterfly. The larva turns into an adult flea. And when a combination of vibration, carbon dioxide, and heat, maybe something else, which is what a mammal walking by is, it pops out and jumps on them. And these pupa are going to be anywhere the cat or whatever the host is has been. And in an area where there's a lot of animal activity, you'll find a lot of these pupa. This is the legend of the sand flea. Fleas do not live in sand, but cats poop in sand. And they drop eggs that turn into pupa, and when somebody walks through the that area, they get fleas on them. We now have insecticides, systemic and topical, for animals that work.
Right.
45 years ago when I started, we didn't have much that worked. Didn't work for a brief period. Organophosphates worked beautifully, but the animals developed a resistance to it rather quickly. And it's only been within the last 20 or 30 years, well, 25, that we've had stuff that works. If you want to get rid of the fleas, get rid of the fleas on the cat. There are insect growth regulators. There's an injectable called Lufeniron. Give it to a cat every 6 months. It doesn't kill the fleas, but it sterilizes them. And cats are not going to drop eggs, which turn into larvae, which turn into pupa in the house. And that's my story on fleas.
I agree 100%. I agree 100% with you. And from trade names, there are products like Provecto, which have really made it much easier to develop a flea barrier on dogs and cats, and lots of growth regulators, lots of other things that work on those fleas. You know, when people and I highly recommend them, and unfortunately when you're feeding a bunch of cats outside, it can be very hard. It can be very hard to treat, and then you get the problem. You get the problem of raccoons are coming. I guarantee, if you got cats coming to your food bowl, you got raccoons coming. And you also have rats.
Yeah, raccoons coming into the house. People are feeding the cat on a screen porch. I've had cases of raccoons coming in that situation, people telling me about it. Anyway, if you got an inside cat, you give him a program shot every 6 months, you won't have any fleas.
That's right.
That's my solution. That's right. That's the cheapest, easiest way to keep flea free if you got a cat.
That's
you can
right.
go in or out. The eggs that fall off of it won't hatch.
Yeah, and if you got 10 or 15 cats, I don't know
then
what you're
going to be an expense.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Well, listen, thanks, Pete.
Nothing free. Yeah. No free lunch.
No free lunches. That's right. It's a real issue, and I do see more and more. We see large numbers of cats, and I don't. They're just more common than they used to be. But Pete, thanks. I think that really confirms what we've been trying to say is it's not so much treating the yard, it's treating the things that bring the fleas into the yard.
Exactly.
That's going to make the difference.
And you can vacuum all you want. This is another one. Laying out chemicals. Chemicals are not going to get that pupa. That thing's impervious. The only thing that'll kill that is high heat. You spray chemicals on your yard. Insecticides are like hand grenades. They don't know good guys and bad guys.
That's right.
And if you got a slope in your yard and you put out an insecticide, Primus spray, after the first rain, you won't find any fleas in the bottom low end of your yard because all the insecticides down there. But it's not going to do anything on the high ground.
Yeah, that's right.
Long term. Anyway,
that's right.
I'm sorry. I just get so upset because it's really a simple problem to take care of, and there are so many old wives' tales and stuff that doesn't work. And if you understand the life cycle of the flea, you can get rid of them.
That's right.
Sorry, Thurman. I'll get off the pulpit.
Pete, thank you. You know, that's the way it is with a lot of insects. But thanks for letting us know about that. So it's really really important knowledge with any insect to
to be sure you understand how that insect is operating. It's like weeds, and we talked about weeds earlier. You invite those insects into your yard, in most cases, by the things you do. And sometimes you can adjust what you do to keep those weeds and insects from being a problem. But you gotta, you know, you gotta smell your own stink. That's hard for us to do.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face. Hasn't stopped raining for days. My world is a flood. Slowly I become one with the mud. But if I can't swim after 40...
Good morning with Plain Gardening. We could talk a lot more about fleas, and I think it's a good thing to talk about fleas, but I think we've talked about fleas enough. I will recap. You're not, and because people will often ask, what do I treat my yard with for fleas? And I keep saying, it ain't the yard. The fleas ain't living on the yard. The fleas may be in the yard by accident, but they're living on the cat. They're living on you. They're living on the dog. And the way, and the raccoons, but mostly the cats and the dogs, and the rats, but mostly the cats and the dogs. And I guarantee that nobody, I don't think I've ever known of a flea problem that wasn't associated with having cats or dogs. So what do you do about it? You treat your dogs, you treat your cats with some of the new generation of flea control products. If you've got 15 cats, you got a problem. You got a big problem, and you need to be thoughtful about it. And I probably won't help you. I probably can't help you. You're going to have fleas forever. End of story. That's it. The best you can do is protect yourself. Don't let those fleas in the house. Try to avoid, don't let the cats in the house. Don't let the cats anywhere near your house. Because the cats are going to be the issue. And you got to treat them. And it's not good to have all those cats in the yard for a lot of reasons. like digging in the yard and trying to plant your tomato, and you suddenly come up with this. Yeah. Anybody know what I'm? Anybody know what I'm saying? Kevin's got this question, and I'm not sure how to answer it. But the bees that are living in his live oak have had a honey spill. Honey is dripping everywhere. Why? You know, I'm not sure unless there's been a lot of times. So one of the things that happens with bees is that they maintain temperatures that keep the honey from getting too liquidy or too solid, or they keep it just the right temperature so that it's useful. My guess is if it's leaking out of the trees, something may be collapsing with the hive itself. There may have been a problem with the bees themselves. Maybe they absconded, they left the hive, and so they're not maintaining the right temperature. And with these high temperatures, it's actually melting the combs where the wax is, where the honey is. And you're losing it there. But I suspect that means there's something, my guess is there's something wrong with the hive, with the bees themselves. And there are lots of things that can go wrong with bees. But that would be my best guess. My best guess on that. Hey, what were the kind of things we were talking about before we were talking about fleas this morning? We were talking about, we got a couple of themes going. And one is about the seasons. And I just want to remind you that the seasons are changing. You need to prepare for that. You need to begin thinking ahead to what's happening with the seasons. Sean sent me a great picture of a southern hibiscus blooming. Looks just beautiful. What kind of plants can you plant? What kind of flowers can you plant right now that will survive? What kind of things can you plant from seed? You know, it's not too late. It's not too late. In fact, it's about the right time. It's a great time. You could have done it sooner, but it's still a fine time to plant okra, which is a type of hibiscus, by the way. It's very closely related to hibiscus. Beautiful thing. One of the prettiest vegetables out there, if you think about it. God, there's some beautiful ornamental varieties of okra. You could just about grow it as an ornamental in and of itself, those beautiful flowers. And then you get to eat the fruit. But there are lots of Tithonia. It's a great time to plant Tithonia. We talk about it a lot. We talk about it a lot because it works. Tithonia, T-I-T-H-O-N-I-A, a great seed for planting right now. If you like starting things from seed, if you can find yourself some Tithonia seed, you'll probably have to buy it online. There are several places that sell it. It's a great little seeds. I wouldn't recommend Tithonia diversifolia, Tithonia rotundifolia, the one with the orange flowers, the red flowers, really beautiful. Tithonia, Mexican sunflower, some people call it, which is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not really a sunflower, and it's not entirely from Mexico. But there it is. Tithonia, great seed to plant. Gets about 6 feet tall. Does that scare you? Oh, I love big things. Big things are beautiful. Is it okay to have big things? No, I know everything's supposed to be really small, isn't it? But this time of year, make an exception. Say to yourself, I want to try big things. I don't want to try little things all the time. I've lived a life trying little things. I want to do something big. I want a big thing. I want Tithonia. I want okra. That's big. That's big. So you can plant those seeds now. You'll get a great, beautiful Tithonia hedge. There's the thing. You know, my wife said, you need to put up a fence. I said, you know, I think I'm going to plant some Tithonia. Makes a great hedge. A Tithonia hedge, a Tithonia fence. That's what we're going to put. That's going to surprise my neighbor. I bet he ain't gonna walk through it. It's good. Tithonia. Really cute, beautiful, cool looking thing. And all the neighbors can say, what is that? What is that thing? How do I get that? Why don't they have that at Walmart? I didn't see that at Home Depot. Lion's Ear, that's another good one. You know, I don't know how it'll do, Lion's Ears. I don't know how it'll do planted later in the year. That's Leonurus. Leonotus Leonurus. You'll have to tell me, Sean, if it does well later in the year. Sean had a great look. You'd have to see his little comments, but he said he got a picture of his hibiscus blooming with his salvia. And then I talked about how pretty okra was, and the next line he had was referring to his picture. Talk about beating okra. That's a pun in a lot of different ways. You have to know about beating okra. We'll talk about beating okra later in the year. There's a benefit to beating okra. We don't literally beat it. You could, and it might almost have the same effect, but we do something else. We call it retuning. We'll talk about that later after you plant your okra. Got any other questions about what's ready for planting this time of year? There's a lot of fun stuff that happens. One of the other things that I'll remind folks, if you want fall tomatoes, you can take cuttings from the healthy part of your tomato now. It's got to be a super healthy part. You don't do it at the bottom. You do it at the very tip. You can take cuttings at the healthy tip of your tomato.
where there's no signs of diseases, you had a good tomato, you were happy with it, take those cuttings right at the tip. This is the time of year to do it. The cuttings can be, you know, 6-8 inches long. That's fine. Take off the bottom few leaves, leave a little bit of leaf at the top. Take several cuttings in a really, really good place. Put them in a little pot with potting soil. Don't put it in full sun just yet. Put it in a little bit of a place where it gets a little bit of sun in the morning. Make sure it's watered. Don't overwater it. Those tomatoes will strike. They will put roots on pretty quick. And you know what? You can use those tomatoes for fall. Then you got a fall crop of tomatoes planted. That's how easy it is. It's also a good time to start tomatoes from seed. It's a great time to start peppers from seed. Also, it's a great time to start okra from seed. It's time. We got a whole, if you're on the Gulf Coast, you got a whole, almost, you got a whole another year in front of you before the end of the year. Because we have such a long growing season, and you can do so many wonderful things. There's some plants that that won't do quite as well planted this late because they won't do as well on shortening days, but some plants will actually bloom better. Some plants will bloom better because the days are going to be shortening from here on out. That's why June 20th is such an important day. We're getting towards that longest day of the year. And it's a transition from one season to another. The days, you'll enjoy the longest day of the year right now. But soon those days will be shortening, and plants will adjust to that. And you'll adjust the kinds of plants that you're growing to take advantage of that. That's one of the things that happens with the seasons coming up. So starting your tomatoes, great thing to do right now. And just really fun, really easy. Really easy thing to do. Am I missing things? Am I missing things that you need to know right now? Is it time to start your lawns? I don't think so. I'd wait. This is probably a better time than it is earlier in the spring. It's probably better to start your lawn now than it would be in, say, March. That's the truth. But it still ain't a great time. I would hold off on rehabbing your lawn until a little later in the year, October, November. That'll be a great time to do it. It's an okay time to plant shrubs because we'll probably get plenty of rainfall that'll keep them watered. And that means if you forget, the rain will be there to help. But the days are going to be hot. So you got to watch them a little bit more carefully. There's probably a little bit of time left. I think it would probably be okay to start your citrus now. It's a little late. You could buy citrus. You could put it out. But a little late for that. A little late for that. I would have started it a little earlier in spring. That's when citrus likes to be started. Ooh, boy. Gingers. We could talk about gingers. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about other things. Give us a call. We got a little bit of time left. 251-343-0106. Danger in that fair land to which I go.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Alicia, you know, the cool thing about this time of year is that the temperature is just right for germinating pepper and tomato seeds and eggplant seeds. There's no need for a heat mat. You just don't think you'll need one. And I think, in fact, you might get things a little too hot if you don't have a temperature control on the seed mat. The soil temperature is going to be nice and warm. No need for it this time of year. That's why it's a lot easier to start tomatoes. And you know, Alicia, don't put it in the basement. Start them on your porch. Put them on your porch. They'll do just fine there. And then they'll get sunlight. Do you have a porch? Surely you have something like a porch. Some covered area that gets a little bit of sunlight, that gets good sunlight. Great place to start seeds. No reason to start them inside. Would be a bad thing, not smart thing to do, to plant them inside this time of year. Plant them outside. There you go. All right, Alicia, you got the message. That's good. So I have a caller here. It's Bill. I'm listening. Bill, what's up?
Yes, sir. I planted 4 6-foot rows of climbing snap beans, Kentucky Wonder, I think they're called. And so I planted them the second week in February, and then I waited 2 more weeks and planted the other 2 rows, 6 feet long. And they've been just absolutely filling up a bucket every time, or twice a week. But now they're still blooming, but their production is probably off now, probably 40% off or more. And so I'm wondering, is this heat going to end up? They're still blooming, but they don't want to set. I'm thinking
That's
about
right.
putting those up and planting okra in their place.
Planting what in their place?
Okra.
Okra, that's right. Well, I think that's okay. Yeah, so I'll tell you, Kentucky Wonder is not that heat tolerant. It does not like really high night temperatures. One of the things you might try that'll give you longer production into summer is the rattlesnake type beans that are very popular in the hot parts of the South. And there are a lot of rattlesnake types. But they will tolerate those high night temperatures a lot better. So Kentucky Wonder, not a great bean for midsummer production, but there's some, like rattlesnake beans, that will produce longer. I think rattlesnake beans have a much finer flavor, a much more robust flavor than the Kentucky Wonders. So. Yeah, I think that's a fine thing to do next year. Try rattlesnakes next year and see if you don't get longer production into these hot nights. Right now with Kentucky Wonder, yeah, I think you might as well go ahead and plant okra.
Okay, well, good, because you know I should have called you first, but you've called on your previous radio station. You mentioned composting, and I wish I'd have heard that. Well, we should have heard you that radio station conversation months of a year or two ago, because I was guilty. I bought these big bins, you know, hot, dark colored plastic with the little holes in them and the tumblers. And so I'm going to put it, after listening to your conversation on radio a few weeks or so ago, I'm going to put it at the street and hope somebody steals it.
All right, Bill, that's right. So, Bill, listen, call me back next week and remind me to talk more about composting.
Okay, great, because I'm all into it now, but I'm doing it your way. I put it directly in my 4x12 raised bed.
That's right.
And so, you know, you you were spot on about all this scientific method of the right amount of green, the right amount of brown, and the right amount of ventilation, and turn it over. Put it in the garden. That's what you said, and I'm going to do
that. That's right.
From now on.
That's right.
Now,
that's
the
right.
other thing, getting a little blight issue on my tomato plant. So what tomato plant would you recommend for Zone 9 in Pascagoula that would be more tolerant or be more resistant to blight?
They're all going to be susceptible to blight this time of year, all of them. So the one thing you can hope for is a tomato that outgrows the blight. It's a tomato that outgrows the blight. And that's going to be a smaller tomato, a smaller, more vigorous tomato. A tomato, by that, I mean a smaller fruited tomato. They're often more vigorous. There are a bunch of them out there, and they are more tolerant of the heat. So basically, the tomatoes that survive the blight are the tomatoes that grow, that continue to grow vigorously. The so-called heat-tolerant tomatoes, that's bogus. They don't work, but we do have, if you grow a smaller tomato, there are lots of varieties out there. I almost don't know where to start. We talk about Mexico Midget, which is a great one, man. It will outgrow blight. It'll probably even survive into September and October and November, which is pretty rare for a tomato here. So July is a hard time for all tomatoes. All tomatoes are going to get blight. I guarantee it. Every tomato is going to get blight. But if they're growing well, then they're going to outgrow it. And listen, Bill, if you heard me, go ahead and take some cuttings. If you've got some tomatoes that are doing well, take some cuttings from the tops of those tomatoes, stick them in potting soil, and you'll replant them again in mid-July when they've got roots. Those young plants will grow right through the blight, and they'll be ready to produce in October.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good information. They're still making little ones. I got some, you know, everywhere from the size of a marble to the size of a baseball. And all in between, they're celebrities. But they're not blight resistant. Well, like none of them are really.
None of them are. Okay. Hey, Bill, we got right here against the end of the show, but call me back next week and let's talk a little bit more about these things, okay?
Yeah. I'm enjoying the heck out of your show. It's great.
All right. Good. So, I didn't give you a recipe for aji dulce. I wonder if I can give you one, but you know, I like to cut them up and put them in a, listen, take those aji dulce peppers. Just mince them up really good. Just cut them up really good with your knife. You're really good. Cut them into smaller pieces. Put them into a black skillet. Roast them just a little bit on that black skillet. Just roast them just a little bit. Then add your oil. If you could find camellia oil, it'd be great. But, you know, something like safflower oil would be really good. And that makes a great base for almost anything. Take that. So you could take that, and if you got southern peas, if you got field peas, if you got pink eye purple hulls, any of those kinds of things, boil those peas just a little bit and then drain them, put them into that base you made with those peppers, stir fry them with the peppers and onions. Oh my goodness, is that not the best thing in the whole world? But you know, I got to where I would just eat those peppers by themselves. Just take a bunch of peppers, cook them in that black skillet, get them a little bit toasty. Then put the oil in there, cook them down a little more, and then just put them on top of rice. Man, that's the greatest thing in the world. But I think it may be even better if you were to take your field peas, if you were to take your pink eye purple hulls, put them in there. You could do the same thing with green beans. You could do the same thing with limas. Really great mix. Great way to do that. And you know what? You got lots of okra. Use the peppers as a base. Throw the okra in there. Okra or eggplant. Both very good. Really good stuff. Makes you want to give up tomatoes, having all them peppers. Oh, it's so good. You can make a great sauce with the peppers. We could go on a while, Tony. I didn't get started early enough. You're going to have to remind me again next week to talk about recipes with peppers. Aji dulce is very sweet, folks. Not hot. We'll be back.
Me no levy taught me to weep.